sucker.
This is Movie Fighters, the show where Chris Sims and I, Matt Wilson, we watch movies and beat them up. And we're doing, I guess, a little bit of a palate cleanser this time after watching all four Left Behind movies.
We are recovering from watching four Left Behind movies by watching what I believe is the opposite of a Left Behind movie. A movie that suggests that animals have the souls that are required for pro wrestling.
Yes, the depth of soul required to be a pro wrestler. We are watching.
And also, can we just spend the next 90 minutes talking about that dog impression you just did? That's your dog voice?
Yeah. It's a dog voice.
I mean, it just sounds like you've got something in your mouth.
I mean, that's what
I guess dogs frequently have things in their mouth.
That's what dog voices always sound like. I mean, I could have done Scooby-Doo or Astro, I guess, but...
Are there other... Like, I feel like Scooby-Doo and Astro are kind of the dog voices. Like, if you're going to do a dog voice, it's kind of what you have to do.
I was sort of doing, speaking of Christian-themed entertainment, I think I was doing Goliath from Davy and Goliath.
I think that is exactly what you were doing. So yeah, we just watched Left Behind for 2 months. We just watched four Left Behind movies. But we are done with that. We are through it. And now this has got to be one of our most requested Movie Fighters movies.
Yes, we're fulfilling your request to watch the direct-to-video wrestling dog film, Russell Madness. I don't know anything about this movie aside from there's a wrestling dog, there's a monkey on the cover. I am entirely baffled by the title. I have a theory about it. My theory is that it was definitely originally titled WrestleMania.
Oh, it was definitely called WrestleMania. There's no way it wasn't. And I'm pretty sure they say it in the trailer.
Yeah. And WWE came along. Because look at the logo. The logo is the WrestleMania logo.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the exact WrestleMania logo.
And some legal person,
a play button because we're watching it on Netflix.
Some legal person, either from WWE or the studio that made this movie, came along and said, you can't call it WrestleMania. That's too close to WrestleMania.
Yeah.
And people are going to associate it. So you got to call it something else. And knowing that they had to have Russell in the title, I guess, because the dog is a Jack Russell Terrier.
Right.
And
it sounds kind of like Russell.
His name is Russell. They were just like, all right, what's another? Let's go to thesaurus.com and find another word for mania. Madness. Fine. Done.
Which is weird because that makes it sound more like reefer madness.
It does.
Like, I'm worried that people are going to smoke this dog.
Or it's like, it's going to be like some direct tribute to Macho Madness.
Maybe. Maybe so.
But I doubt it. I doubt there's any direct tribute to Macho Madness.
Now, the weird thing is, if anybody out there is a fan of Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, the West Coast promotion, they have an event called Kurt WrestleMania that sadly has nothing to do with Kurt Russell. It's just a funny title for the event.
Yeah.
Which I think is an annual thing, and they're fine. They get away with that easily. But this movie came out at a time... Like, this movie came out, I believe, between Scooby-Doo and the WrestleMania Mystery and whatever the Flintstones WWE crossover was called.
You could maybe rest the title of this movie being what it is on that Scooby-Doo movie directly. Perhaps it was the Warner Brothers people, lawyers who were like, people are going to think this is the Scooby-Doo movie. Dumb people are going to think this is a Scooby-Doo movie.
What? If this had come out any other time, I would be I would say, oh no, this is obviously not a WWE production. But it coming out like in a time when we just got a Scooby-Doo movie, and it actually having a guy who used to be in WWE in it, like it would be very easy to assume that this was an official Titan Sports production.
Yeah,
of official World Wrestling Entertainment.
I don't know anything else about this movie.
I can tell you that we've hit a milestone that we have never hit before on this show.
Okay.
I believe unless I am mistaken, I believe this is the first movie we have ever watched for Movie Fighters featuring someone I have met in real life.
Would that be Johnny Mundo?
That's him. Johnny Mundo, a.k.a. John Morrison, a.k.a. John Hennigan, yes. Which I believe is his real name.
That is what he is credited as in this movie.
Yes. Who I am actually very excited to see in this movie.
I like him a lot in Lucha Underground.
Physically, he's great. You know, like, physically, he's fantastic. If you told me, hey, we've got to put someone in the ring and have him sell against a dog, like against a small dog, he would be one of the, like, he would be on the short list, I think.
He's not really super well known for selling, though. Like, I would.
No, but he's super well known for, like, very physical things and, like, kind of pulling off physical stuff himself.
Sure. My go-to guy would be Dolph Ziggler.
Yeah, Dolph Ziggler. Obviously. Like, Dolph Ziggler and Kota Ibushi would be the top two.
Yeah. But I am excited to see John Morrison / John Hennigan in this. There are two other names in the credits that I recognize.
Okay.
John Ratzenberger.
Right.
Who is in every Pixar movie and this.
Right.
And Will Sasso, a well-known fan of wrestling, who is also a comedian who does a bunch of voices.
Big wrestling fan. Was betrayed by one of his Mad TV co-stars when she joined the NWO.
That's right. I remember that. So at least maybe he'll have fun in the movie. A lot of these other names I'm not familiar with. I'll tell you this about the director, Robert Vince. His entire career,
okay,
has been animals playing sports movies.
No, well, this Russell Madness is an entry in the Air Bud canon, right?
Is it actually related to the Air Bud movies?
Well, it is advertised as being from the producers of Air Bud and Air Buddies.
Well, I don't know that it's actually connected, but I'll tell you this about the director, Robert Vince.
Okay.
He directed Air Bud Seventh Inning Fetch.
No.
He directed.
That's also available on Netflix, by the way. We could watch that right now.
He directed Snow Buddies and Santa Buddies. He directed Super Buddies. He directed Santa Paws 2, Treasure Buddies, Spooky Buddies, the first Santa Paws, Space Buddies.
Those buddies have gotten into a lot of adventures.
They really have. He directed the Most Valuable Primate and Most Extreme Primate movies.
What's Most Extreme? That sounds like Most Valuable Primate. I get it. Like that's a baseball movie, I assume.
It's hockey.
Oh, a hockey movie? Okay, fine. Most Extreme Primate sounds like a documentary about a face-ripping chimpanzee.
He's a snowboarder.
Oh, well, okay, fine.
He produced the first Air Buddies and many of the other Air Bud movies. He has been involved in virtually no films that are not about animals playing sports, at least not since the mid-90s.
I would take that work.
You find a niche, and you run with it.
I mean, I probably wouldn't take that work because I am allergic to dogs.
Right.
So I would probably have a hard time on the set. But, you know, you like animals.
I do not want to direct films with animals in them.
One thing you can say about all these dogs, and by the way, looking at it, it seems Air Bud is a Disney property. I don't think Russell Madness is, and I also think that Disney's lawyers would have been like, we're going to call it WrestleMania.
Yeah.
The one thing you can say about these movies is that these small dogs are adorable.
Sure,
like,
yeah.
If you are a film director and it is literally your job to get up and go watch a dog do a sport every day, that is a job. That is a job several people I know would be happy to have.
Look, Jack Russell Terriers are great animals, and they are fun to watch. I do not want to corral one and having one do wrestling matches.
Yeah, but you're not the guy doing that though. You're just the director. Surely there's a dog wrangler.
I guess that's fair. I'll tell you this: Netflix thinks I'm going to give this 3.5 stars.
Netflix thinks I'm going to give this 4.5 stars.
And the average rating is 4 stars. This is a very popular movie.
Yeah, highly rated. This might be the highest rated movie we've watched.
in our tradition of reading some Netflix reviews, here's the most helpful. 9 out of 9 members found this review helpful.
Okay.
Not a bad little short movie requiring, quotes, suspension of disbelief, end quote.
No, no, no. No, it says suspension of belief.
Oh, that's right. I corrected them. To accept a talking monkey and a wrestling dog. So apparently the monkey talks.
Okay.
Certainly good family fare with a fair amount of laughs. John Hennigan was certainly guilty of extreme overacting, but it was excusable in this type of movie.
That, I'm really excited now.
Yeah. This is my favorite review. Fun movie about a warm, loving, supportive family of four that join forces to revive a wrestling arena they inherit, aided with an insecure Russell Terrier and a character talking monkey that doubles as a wrestling trainer. There are two character actors that add to the fun. Fred Willard. So Fred Willard is in this.
Oh, boy.
And John Ratzenberger.
Talk about a dude who will take any job.
Oh, man. He loves working. This is a great film for children.
I admire that about him.
For children to show the importance of loyalty and family.
That is exciting. I am, weirdly enough, genuinely excited to watch this with you.
I would watch it no other way. I'll tell you that.
Last thing before we get started, a snack situation.
I just have a soda. Again, we are taping this in the evening instead of the afternoon. I just ate dinner, so I'm not snacking. Chris, what kind of snacks you got on hand?
Well, Matt, we live in the South. We each live in a Carolina, a different Carolina, respectively, but that's where we live.
That's right.
It's June. It is a brimstone nightmare outside.
It's a hot time, yeah.
Yeah. The heat index will be 108 degrees tomorrow. So I have some M&Ms over here, but I'm also, as soon as we, before we hit play on the movie, I'm going to get up and go get an ice cream bar.
Yeah.
I've got some good humor in the freezer.
Just gnaw on giant cubes of ice through the whole movie.
I might do it, dude. I might do it.
All right. We're going to try to beat the heat by watching this dog wrestle.
And again, it is on Netflix if you want to pause the movie and watch Russell Madness with us. I know I have several friends who have already watched this film, including the one who introduced me to John Hennigan. So
it's the copyright date on this movie is 2015. This is probably one of the newest movies on Netflix. So you can go check it out right now. We're going to watch it. We're going to take a little musical interlude, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about Russell Madness. We're back from watching Russell Madness, and everyone lied to us. Everyone who suggested that we watch this movie, Netflix for telling us that we were going to give it 3.5 and 4.5 stars, respectively. Anyone who did not warn us that this is a goddamn travesty of a movie lied to us.
First of all, I hated this fucking movie. I hated it. I hated every second of it. I wanted to turn it off. Less than 1 minute in, and I continued wanting to turn it off as the movie continued. Secondly, I don't want to say that the people who wrote this movie actively hate their audience, because I do not want to ascribe that level of intent to what they're doing. I'm sure that these are not people who hate children. I will say, however, that there is a staggering amount of disrespect for this audience in that they did not even figure out how a wrestling match works.
Let's go through the things
before writing a movie about pro wrestling.
Let's go through the things that this movie doesn't understand. First and foremost,
wrestling.
Wrestling. Secondly, and shockingly, dogs. It also does not understand business in any form or fashion.
Yeah.
It doesn't understand...
legally binding agreements.
Does not understand that. Doesn't understand how the internet works. Doesn't understand how, like, things are titled on YouTube. Doesn't understand that wrestling is not performed in dedicated arenas that look like movie theaters. Like, every town has a wrestling arena that is like a movie theater that people just go gather in.
We could just talk about the things they don't understand about wrestling for an hour. Like, there are multiple points in this movie where people talk about wrestling matches being composed of rounds. That's not how pro wrestling works.
Even fucking John Morrison says to the Vince McMahon analog in this movie, who is played by John Ratzenberger, whose name is Mick Vaughn.
Cliff Lavin.
His name is Mick Vaughn in this, who gets like one Vince McMahon-like line, and then otherwise is just, you know, evil businessman archetype. He asks him, hey boss, what round do you want me to go down in? You know there aren't rounds, John.
Surely to God, surely John Morrison, who he has built in this movie as a two-time Intercontinental Champion, his character, and I feel like John Morrison probably is a two-time Intercontinental Champion. He at least had it once. But surely he goes, I don't want to make any trouble. It's just that pro wrestling matches aren't composed of rounds at all. Like, that's not a thing that pro wrestling is. That's a boxing thing.
There are at least two people involved in this movie who should absolutely know that. One of them is a pro wrestler. The other is a massive pro wrestling fan who has been on Raw multiple times.
And there's
Will Sasso.
Two people who were in NXT. There's two people who were in developmental in this movie, in addition to Will Sasso and John Morrison.
It's infuriating.
Let's start in, because we're going to, like, we'll get to everything as it happens. The first thing that you said was, I hate this voice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because the first thing that we get is a voiceover from Russell, whose name in the movie, by the way, his ring name is Russell Maniac. And there are songs. There is a kind of parody 80s training montage song where they sing Russell Maniac. So that was clearly the title of the movie at one point.
The song is used twice. It's in the training montage. It's also over the credits at the end.
Yeah.
So yes, we start with Russell, this dog, at a pet store. So apparently he came from a puppy mill, which is already depressing as hell.
Super depressing.
He and his litter of dogs that he is a part of are in a pet store being sold. And the first thing that happens, the very first thing we see, is a child picks up Russell as a small puppy, and Russell pees on this kid.
Yeah.
And we find out that Russell is not being adopted because he is peeing on everybody that picks him up.
It's so gross, and it happens all the time, and it's so much. It is like a super soaker level stream. Like, and it's getting in people's mouths at certain points of the movie.
Yeah,
and it's not like right away. I was not, like, that's when I wanted to turn it off.
So,
because I knew no good would come of this.
All of Russell's brothers and sisters get adopted immediately because they're cute dogs. They're Jack Russell Terriers. They're adorable dogs. But Russell gets left behind, and we see that there's an actual scene where the manager of the pet store walks out of the pet store, turns off the lights, and just leaves this dog sitting in the middle of the store in a little display that the dog could definitely jump over.
Yeah, it's like a little plexiglass box that is apparently where Russell lives.
And there's no food or water there for him. There's nowhere for him to go to the bathroom. It's cruel. That is animal cruelty. So overnight, apparently, Russell grows up. He becomes a full-grown dog.
Well, I mean, I think we're supposed to assume that he has been there for a while, not that he magically grows overnight.
Right. But according to this scene, it's just like one night. Now he's an adult. And there's another dog in a pen close to his that is making fun of him because he's going to be taken to the pound. It is his day to be taken to the pound, where he is going to be killed. And this other dog is like, ha ha ha, you got to go to the pound now. the manager of the store is very excited about this. Russell overhears this. He's like, oh no, I'm going to go to the pound. So he suddenly knows how to do like flips and these crazy athletic moves to kick the manager in the face and run out of the store and go running off into an alley where he hides out. Also, we see at this point that one of the store clerks, who is the nice guy who works in this pet store, was going to adopt Russell. And he holds up the little certificate of adoption, which is going to be a major plot point in the third act. That is Chekhov's adoption slip.
So while that is happening, we just watched this and I cannot remember the name of the family. It's a very distinctive name. Matt, do you remember the name of the family?
Ferraro.
The Ferraro family arrives from San Diego back to Portland. That's where this movie is taking place. It's taking place in Portland, which actually goes a long way to explaining all the clothes the children are wearing.
And,
because all
and,
of the children are dressed like 70s Sears catalog models.
Also that people are super excited about and immediately into the notion of a wrestling dog.
Yes. If only he had been a wrestler and unicycle repairman.
That's right.
So they pull up outside the Ferraro Arena. Is it Ferraro? Do I have it right? I think it feels wrong.
The family pronounces it Ferraro, but one of the two announcers who work in the Ferraro Arena, there's Fred Willard, and then the other one is Mac from Night Court. Mac from Night Court pronounces it Ferraro.
Okay.
But it's entirely possible that he just doesn't care and was doing this for the paycheck, and they told him, actually, Mac from Night Court, it's Ferraro, not Ferrero. And he said, I do not care.
He said, yeah, I got it. We want to do another take? Okay. I'm going to sit do the exact same. So they pull up, and there is a really nice looking theater. And it is a theater. It's basically the Hammerstein Ballroom.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's got, you know, balcony seating, and there's a ring in the middle. And it is called the Ferraro Wrestling Arena. It is a beautiful venue in the middle of Portland, Oregon, that only had pro wrestling ever. And then when there stopped being wrestling, they just boarded this building up with all the shit inside of it and stopped. As though there is not a need for venues in Portland.
Right. Like nobody would have turned this into a music venue or something. Yeah.
And as though it is a common thing for there to have just been like buildings dedicated entirely to pro wrestling. I mean, that is a thing that has existed in the history of pro wrestling. Like the Dallas Sportatorium. And even, you know, if you want to go to like the impact zone of TNA. But those are kind of specialty buildings.
Well, the impact zone is a TV studio.
Yeah,
right? It's not an arena strictly for wrestling. It is a TV studio that they call the impact zone.
Yeah.
The Sportatorium conceivably could have hosted other sports. That's why they call it the Sportatorium instead of the Dallas Wrestling Arena.
Yeah. Even the Sportatorium, I don't think, was used entirely for wrestling. But this building, that they stop having pro wrestling at this building for no reason. There's a plot point introduced where there's a family, and the husband's father has died and left him arena.
It's his grandfather. His grandfather was the owner of the Ferraro Wrestling promotion, which is just called Ferraro Wrestling.
It's his grandfather? I thought it was his son's grandfather.
No, it's his grandfather.
Okay.
They moved away when when the dad was a kid.
Okay. How old's that monkey?
That was my question. That monkey's got to be like 45.
He leaves him this arena. And presumably the wrestling business, the Ferraro Wrestling business, Ferraro Wrestling, and says that in the terms of his will, he has 1 year to turn a profit. And if he can turn a profit within a year, then he will have the rights to sell the building and do whatever he wants with it. He can flip the building and make it a very nice venue for all kinds of events. That makes no sense, because that never really comes back. And in fact, even though he mistakenly sells the building, and there is a big plot point later on about what he does and does not own and what nullifies the contract, and that's never brought up. Why is the building all boarded up and dusty and old? Why doesn't his grandfather just leave him a failing wrestling business?
And seemingly, this is never really brought up either. Like I said, when this came up in the movie, like one of my favorite plot points in movies is like weird challenges that people have to accomplish in wills. Mm-hmm. But that never pays off in any way.
None of it is brought up again. None of it.
It's just a way to get the family there so that they can come back and like try to do some wrestling. So they get to the arena and it's dusty. There's the ring, like there's still a ring up, but the ring ropes are like hanging off the turnbuckles.
Oh, the four ring ropes, you mean?
There are four ropes for some reason, and it's really infuriating.
Oh, I was so mad because boxing rings have four ropes. And kickboxing rings have four ropes, but wrestling rings very definitely have three ropes. That is a thing. Watch one match.
The upholstery
all
in the seats.
All you have to do is watch it once.
The upholstery in the seats is all messed up. And then we see some scenes where the family goes into the living quarters that is included in this giant wrestling arena.
I just pulled a face and shrugged, but no one can see it. But yeah.
Like, there's a house built into it, like it's a restaurant, where it's all dusty and old, there's chandeliers and old lamps.
But it's also fully furnished.
Yeah, totally fully furnished.
How long ago did his grandfather die, is my question.
But the here's the crazy part.
Because it's like this building is being opened for the first time since 1989.
It's like the building's being opened for the first time since the 30s, because everything looks that old. But we find out that the heyday of Ferraro Pro Wrestling was in the 80s. And we see this flashback to the biggest star of Ferraro Pro Wrestling, Illmaniac, which is
Illmaniac.
The famous Italian pro wrestler Illmaniac being like the champion of Ferraro Pro Wrestling. And then the villain of the movie, Mick Vaughn, showing up and kind of stealing Illmaniac away from Ferraro. And that precipitates the lead characters, or the dad of the family, his father deciding to leave his grandfather's business behind. Mm-hmm. And that breaks the grandfather's heart. Now, the monkey is there in that scene. That scene definitely takes place 30 years ago. So how old is this fucking monkey?
I don't... And the monkey... We see the monkey's origin, because it turns out the monkey can fucking talk. And we see the monkey being experimented on in a scene that seems like the 70s?
I guess. There's a guy with an afro. Is the monkey immortal? Like, will he never die?
We're getting ahead of ourselves. Like, there's an old roll-top desk, and when the roll-top desk is open, there's comics in there.
Yeah,
it's issues of Blue Devil.
The living quarters is full of, like, super old antique furniture, but also, like, very 80s-style-looking phones attached to the walls.
And with all due respect to Dan Mishkin and Gary Kahn, I feel like that just means that they walked into a comic book store and were like, where are your quarter books? Thank you. Yes, we need these to decorate the set. Are we to believe that Grandpa Ferraro just, like, packed up in 1989 and left the building and boarded it up? And that there has been... It is downtown in Portland. And it is a the exterior shots make it look like a beautiful building. There's like a marquee, like it needs to be cleaned up and everything, but it is impossible for me to believe that this building would not have been used in the decades since.
Speaking of cleaning up the building, that is something that occurs instantly. It is glossed over completely. The family just gets the building back to some level of presentability right away. Like, the ring is fixed, all the seating is fixed, and we immediately jump to the dad, whose name is Nate, by the way, because I just looked it up because I had forgotten his name. And his wife, whose name is Colleen, who looks so much like Samantha Bee that it is super distracting. And the dad, we kept commenting, looks like white Dario Cueto from Lucha Underground and talks like Tom Green.
He sounds, I said that he sounds exactly like a 50-50 mix of Kumail Nanjiani and Buster Bluth.
But with like a lot of Canada in there. He's super Canadian.
Oh, I guess I should say that it makes sense that this venue would not have been used for anything other than wrestling, because it does have a giant carved logo over the stage that says the most important tag team is family.
Yes.
And so then, Matt and I are probably going to get tattoos this weekend.
Also, there in the entryway, there is a message in Latin. It's like nonsense Latin. But it's like, truth and reliability make the greatest role. Which, I don't understand what that means. But there's a saying in Latin carved into the wall also. So they decide, the dad and the wife decide that they are going to have to hire some wrestlers.
Yeah, well, and there's no conflict about this. Like, I kind of assumed going into it that the dad, because the dad like comes in, he's like, yeah, I wish we could just flip this place. I wish we could sell it and move back to San Diego. But there's like, he is immediately like, oh yeah, I'll become a wrestling promoter. Like, I expected there to be some kind of drama where he's like, yeah, you know, I didn't really get along with my dad because he wanted to push me into being a wrestler and I didn't want it. But no, it's like between scenes, he goes from, this is such a burden to, yeah, I'm going to be a booker.
And,
I'm gonna book the shows.
Everybody else in the family is super into the idea of being wrestling promoters. Like, the wife loves the costume. Like, there's a couple scenes where she's in this room full of costumes for wrestlers. By the way, the costumes in this movie, like the flashback scene to the 80s.
Yeah, we should talk about that flashback because it's bonkers.
Looks like a circus performance from the 30s.
I mean, look, you and I were watching wrestling in the 80s.
Sure.
And we have, in the years since, certainly gone back and watched quite a bit of wrestling from the 80s.
Absolutely.
You and I don't think have memories of people being dressed like 1920s circus strongmen.
And
outside of Simon Gotch.
Well, and outside of Doink, clowns.
Yeah, but not even, he doesn't even look like a wrestling clown. He just looks like a circus clown with like a padded butt.
Yeah, there's a part where he like bounces off the ring with his butt, like as a gag. And the grandfather looks like an old circus performer or circus ringmaster, not a wrestling promoter. The only things in that scene that say anything related to the 80s are there's a guy with a big cell phone in the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And Mick Vaughn, who shows up to scam the grandfather out of, I guess, Illmaniac, it has like a mullet, like a blonde mullet. And those are the only parts of that scene that say 80s. Everything else is literally 70 years ago. These circus people, the descendants of the circus people, they say, we got to get some wrestlers. And the wife is super into it. And so the husband, I already forgotten their names again, Nate.
Nate and Colleen.
Yeah. He calls a wrestler that he just happens to know, who
he goes onto his website and I guess gets his contact information. He gets his booking information.
And it's this wrestler with like a German yodeler gimmick. And he calls him up and he says, "Hey, it's me, Nate Ferraro. You know, from Ferraro Wrestling, that promotion that hasn't existed since the late 80s in at least 25 years. I'm doing a match, and I would like you to come perform in the match. Will you come perform?"
Yeah, because you know what wrestling shows have, is they usually have one match.
And this wrestler, who is surprisingly open and honest with him, says, "Nah, listen, brother, I'm under contract with the WUF, which is Mick Vaughn's promotion, and he won't let me wrestle for anybody else, or I'll be blacklisted. So I can't come perform for you." And apparently this is the only wrestler that Nate is aware of, because he's immediately just despondent over this. Well, there's nobody's going to come wrestle at our show.
So his Colleen wife sits down on his lap,
yep,
and goes onto Craigslist and puts up a message about looking for wrestlers. And in a movie that has like five scenes of a dog pacing in people's mouths, I don't know why this couldn't be a setup for a hilarious misunderstanding about posting that ad in the wrong section of Craigslist.
Meanwhile, their kid, whose name I have also forgotten. Well, they actually have two kids. The one kid's name is Max. He's the kid who matters. And then there's a daughter whose name is Lena, who literally only matters for one scene, and then it is completely forgotten.
I don't even, like, saying that she matters for one scene is charitable.
Well, she sees the monkey before anybody else. Yes. There's a scene where she meets up with that monkey, whose name is Hunk, and she has a tea party with him, and then she later introduces the monkey to the family, and then she ceases to have any importance in the movie at all. The kid Max goes to school at his school in Portland, and these kids are wearing the weirdest clothes to school that you could possibly imagine. Max is wearing a fucking fedora to school. He is putting up a poster for the wrestling show, and the other kids are like, "Hey, yeah, we'll go to the wrestling show." So they show up in the scene where there is a wrestling show. So the kids come, and a handful of other people, they arrive at the wrestling show. And the match, the one match of the show, is this guy who breaks cinder blocks. That's his whole deal. He gets in the ring and he breaks cinder blocks. And the guy that they managed to get on Craigslist is this guy with like a surfer dude gimmick. And the minute he comes out, he does not want to wrestle. He will not wrestle.
Yeah, and this is where we find out that it's a shoot, brother. It's That's all right. real. It's all completely 100% real.
Nothing is worked. Because the dad, Nate, has to convince the surfer guy to go get in the ring with the cinder block crushing guy. Finally, he gets him to go get in the ring. But then, what is it that happens that makes the surfer guy just walk out in the end?
He breaks a cinder block.
Okay.
Vic Vice, who is dressed as an old-timey prisoner.
Yep.
Like, with the stripes.
Yeah, that was that guy's name, Vic Vice. And so the surfer guy leaves, and they don't have anybody else to wrestle. Now, as I mentioned, Russell the dog is hanging out in this alley, and it happens to just be the alley outside the wrestling arena. He has been having some trouble with a British bulldog, which is the one actual wrestling joke in the movie.
I don't think it is.
You don't think that the British bulldog is a wrestling joke?
No, I don't. I honestly don't. Because the rest of the, like, there's maybe like two other things that I feel like were maybe written by someone with a passing understanding of pro wrestling, but they are so few that I don't think, I think what it is, is that it's just a British bulldog, like an actual British bulldog.
Anyway, joke or not, there's this British bulldog that's been threatening Russell in the alley.
Who is clearly not voiced by a British person.
Yes, he is clearly an American doing a terrible British accent. First, there is a conflict over a mostly eaten T-bone steak. Then there is a employee at a restaurant that gives Russell, like, a sausage to eat.
It's specifically referred to as a turkey sausage multiple times, which I don't understand.
Yeah, I don't know why that's important. But he's given this sausage, and the bulldog continues to threaten him.
And it happens twice, which is completely unnecessary. Because the first time it happens, and the talking monkey intervenes, and then the same thing happens again, and Russell is, I guess, chased into the wrestling ring. And I don't understand why that doesn't just happen the first time. Or why the monkey doesn't say, well, hey, come inside and I'll, you know, introduce you to this family. They like animals because they like this monkey. Also, have we talked about the monkey yet? I mean, I know we've talked about the monkey a little bit and how he's seemingly immortal and maybe the product of a genetic experiment. Like some Planet of the Apes shit going on.
Well, as I mentioned, he has a tea party with the little girl, and the little girl sees that he can talk. After this match, that's where the monkey really starts playing a role in the movie. I should note that the bulldog completely disappears after this point in the movie. So the bulldog chases Russell into the arena. Somehow, Russell ends up in the ring after the surfer guy leaves. The dad, Nate, decides he's going to have to suit up and go in and wrestle the match. And he tells the announcers, whatever happens, just go with it.
Right. Well, real quick, I want to go back to the monkey. Whose name is Hunk?
Yes.
Which, oh, Christ. Okay. So, the monkey is voiced by Will Sasso.
Right.
Will Sasso, big wrestling fan, appeared on WCW during the hottest period in the company's history. During the hottest period in wrestling history.
Introduced The Rock to late-night Saturday night comedy shows by having him come on Mad TV.
Yeah, yeah. Does the voice of Hunk as Dom DeLuise?
It seems like that is absolutely what he's doing. The voice he's doing.
It is 100% a Dom DeLuise impression, which I guess is because the monkey's Italian?
I guess because
I don't understand.
All the Ferraros are supposed to be Italian. They are an Italian wrestling dynasty, like Bruno Sammartino.
Right, exactly like Bruno Sammartino.
The dad says he's going to wrestle in the match, but before he can get out into the ring in his ring gear, which looks fucking ridiculous, he looks like a trapeze artist. Russell the dog comes running into the ring instead. The announcers, not sure of what to do, put their hands over the microphones and say, hey, Nate told us to go with whatever, so we're going to go with this and say that the dog is here to wrestle. So they start announcing Russell as a wrestler. And through some weird series of accidents, Russell chokes his opponent out.
I mean, you say it's a weird series of accidents, but he literally throws a dropkick and then, like, wraps his paws around a man's neck and throttles him until he is unconscious, which is illegal.
Yeah, he should be disqualified for one thing. But it doesn't look like any of it is intentional. It looks like he's just doing whatever. But he manages to bring down, what's the dude's name again? Vic Vice. And the ref, who is the worst fucking ref, even by, like, WWE standards, picks up Vic Vice's arm three times and puts it down and goes, he's out! Which you think might be something he would only say for this match, since he, you know, Russell did technically knock his opponent out. He says it at the end of every goddamn match.
Which is not what you say in wrestling. It's not what you say. It's not how wrestling works. Also, there are multiple occasions where someone will get knocked out and they will just be face down on the mat, and Russell will be standing on their back, and the referee will do the thing where he lifts the opponent's hand three times to see if he's unconscious, which is only a thing you do in very specific occasions.
During a submission that could knock somebody out.
They don't figure out that if they just flipped the guy over, they could count a pinfall until three quarters of the way through the movie.
This match where the dog beats Vic Vice, initially the Ferraros think that this is going to make them a laughingstock. They think that this is clearly the most ridiculous thing that has ever happened in pro wrestling. I can tell you it is not. A dog winning is tame by a lot of pro wrestling standards.
I mean, look, the most believable part of this movie is that I think people would pay money to go see a wrestling dog.
Sure. But people record it and put it on YouTube under the title, Check This Out.
And it gets 2 million hits overnight.
Yes.
With the title, Check This Out.
And Maureen shows this to Nate. And he's like, oh no, we're so embarrassed. This is so embarrassing. And she goes, no, this means that Russell is the biggest thing to happen to wrestling, and we have to have him go wrestle again. So they set up another match that is a fatal four-way, I think, to determine who is going to wrestle the dog next. There's a packed arena. But before that fatal four-way happens, there has to be a negotiation where Hunk, this is where Hunk really comes in. Hunk negotiates a contract with the family for Russell to wrestle for them. He has to convince Russell.
Everything he says about bananas, he just wants fucking bananas.
He just constantly fucking talks about bananas.
It is baby kindergarten, baby school monkey jokes.
He has like to convince
everything he says that could apply to a banana. He goes, "Oh, like a banana."
Yeah,
like oh, like if he was listening to me, he'd be like, "Oh, this is a good mashup. Like how you could mash up bananas."
It's awful. It's all worse. So stupid and terrible.
It's really awful.
But first, he has to convince Russell that the family wants him to wrestle for them. And once Russell is convinced of that, there's this weird meeting in the ring where Hunk the Monkey says, all right, Russell will wrestle for you, but only if he becomes a permanent part of the family. And also, oh, you gotta give me a bunch of bananas because I'm a monkey.
This is not a great Dom DeLuise, Matt. I'm sorry.
Well, I wasn't exactly trying to do a real impression of the monkey.
So, well, also, this is where everybody's just like, huh, that monkey who's wearing clothes can talk. Nobody goes, is anyone else seeing this? I'm losing my shit because animals are talking right now.
Also, that monkey is wearing a tie. Also, how did that monkey tie a tie?
Hunk says that he speaks people, and he speaks canine, and feline, and zebra, so he's translating. Which means, like, the Ferraro family is now learning that all animals are in fact sapient creatures.
That talk in their own languages.
That pray and make wishes on stars.
Yes, there is a scene we should have noted where it's very similar to Left Behind. Russell the dog prays in that alley for a family. Mm-hmm. And he gets that prayer is answered.
Yes,
because the Ferraro family agrees to let him be part of the family and wrestle. There's also an agreement where Hunk says he has to train Russell, and the kid, Max, says he wants to be trained by a monkey also in wrestling. I'm pretty sure there are wrestling schools he could go to, but no, he wants to be trained by this goddamn monkey who can't do anything but make fucking banana jokes all the time. So there's a match between a caveman, a mummy, like a really terrible South Asian stereotype, and one other guy that I don't really remember, to determine who is going to wrestle Russell in the next of Russell's matches. The arena is packed because Russell is now very popular because of this YouTube video. People even already have shirts because they've determined that his name is now Russell Maniac. And he's already branded, and everybody knows who his name at this point. The mummy wins.
It's funny that you bring up that It's nice to go to a place where everybody knows your name.
The Mummy wins. Russell comes out and immediately wins the match just by taking his bandages off.
Yeah, and like I was laughing my ass. This is the hardest that I laughed in this movie because I just saw this mummy in the ring and I was like, it's the Yeti! It's the Yeti!
All Russell has to do is take his bandages off and he is immediately knocked out cold. Which he doesn't even hit him once.
I think this means that in the world of this movie, that man was literally cursed by a mummy. Like, that he was a he's a human who was covered up in a mummy's bandages and cursed by a mummy, and Russell broke that man's curse. I honestly think that is what happened.
Well, in that case, good going, Russell. You helped that guy out. After the match, the Ferraro family celebrates. John Ratzenberger, who no longer has his mullet, Mick Vaughn, is standing in the back of the arena. Nate comes up to him and he goes, "Hey, what are you doing here? You're the guy who ran my grandfather out of business." And Mick Vaughn just goes, "I'm a paying customer, just like anybody else." And he points to his ticket. And he says, "Listen, I think we should try to partner up with Russell. Let's do business together. Because, you don't have all that much capacity here in this arena. And I can bring in a lot more people through the WUF. The Wrestling United Federation, which sounds more like the name of a union than an actual wrestling promotion.
It's a union of people you ought to respect. That's what it is. I think it's the Wrestlers United Federation.
Which makes it sound even more like a union.
Yeah. Everything that Vaughn says is a cliche. Well, every piece of dialogue he has is a cliche.
Well, this is the point where he says a thing that almost sounds like somebody who has paid attention to wrestling in their lives might have a villainous wrestling promoter say. Mm-hmm. Because he says, back in the day, it was all about the wrestling. Now it's more about entertainment. Which is absolutely something Vince McMahon would say.
Yeah.
Has said multiple times. So he convinces Nate to come have a meeting with him about Russell.
And that is infuriating, by the way. That they could pick up on things like that. That they could have this ruthless promoter, who is very obviously a parody of Vince McMahon, and then they don't know how wrestling matches work.
Yeah.
They don't know how many ropes are on the ring.
Infuriating. So Nate and the dog go and meet Mick Vaughn at his office, WUF headquarters, which is also apparently in Portland, because they have an arena down the street from the Ferraro Wrestling Arena, which is also totally dedicated to wrestling.
Yep. Yep. Now look, nothing else happens there.
Now look, we have talked on this show about how we actually love movies where they take place in worlds where that sport, the particular sport that is the focus of that movie, is the most important thing in the entire world. Right? Mm. But in this movie, you don't get that sense. You get the sense that wrestling is almost kind of a marginal thing. But there are two dedicated wrestling arenas down the street from each other in Portland, Oregon.
Which, big city.
Not that big compared to Chicago or New York or L.A.
No. I would like to live in the world where each town has a beautifully restored, dedicated wrestling arena with wrestling-related slogans carved into the walls.
Sure.
Like, that is a world I would love to live in. But that is not a world that I believe is being represented in this movie.
Right. In the meeting, Mick Vaughn says, "Listen, I'm going to put Russell in a championship match in the WUF. All you have to do is sign this contract. I'm going to buy 51% of Ferraro Wrestling." Nate is kind of like 51%, which is also infuriating. This is a movie for tiny babies who don't understand anything, but they don't take a moment for a little bit of expository dialogue about how he's buying a controlling interest of this wrestling federation. There was a fucking interminable scene where Nate couldn't figure out that the monkey hunk wanted to be a manager or wanted to be a trainer. But they can't explain the notion of a controlling interest in a business.
In a property, no less.
Nate reluctantly agrees to do this because he wants Russell to get this match. They come to an agreement. Mick Vaughn suggests that they do this match at the WUF arena because it is much bigger than the Ferraro Wrestling Arena.
Well, at one point they go on tour. They agree to have all the Russell's matches at the Ferraro Arena. Basically, the idea is that Vaughn will just have merchandising rights, right? Which, again, is a complicated concept for children to understand. So the Wrestlers United Federation is going to make the money off all the merch. But all the matches are going to happen at the Ferraro Arena. And also, there's a really terrible scene where a building inspector shows up and you find out that the arena is basically a death trap.
There's this building inspector who I remarked looked like the character that makes the Incredibles costumes. And who talks like Auric Goldfinger. She comes and she inspects the building and the sprinklers don't work. All the safety stuff in the building doesn't work. There's a really gross part where she takes a monkey wrench, and they make a joke out of that, where the monkey has to go like, monkey? And she takes one of the sprinklers off, and this weird yellow goop comes out. It looks like fucking banana pudding coming out of the sprinkler. Like, that would not be stuff that would be in there. And I mean, it gets all in her hair.
I think they are literally shitting on her.
I guess.
I think it is supposed to be sewage. And I think that because there are multiple points in this movie where a monkey is pissing in people's mouths.
A dog is pissing.
I'm sorry. You're right. It was the dog. It was not the monkey. That was... I did not mean to impugn Hunk, the monkey.
There's another part where she is trying to test a fire extinguisher and she puts that in her face and it exudes this gross fire extinguisher stuff in her face. Literally two scenes later, they have totally fixed all that stuff and we have not seen any of it. Any building improvements that are made, we don't even get a montage of any of that. We do get a wrestling training montage, though, with Russell and Max learning how to wrestle.
Part of the deal with Cliff Clavin.
Mick Vaughn.
Vaughn. Part of the deal with Vaughn is that he's going to pay for all the building repairs. So they literally introduce a problem and then solve that problem in the very next scene.
Yeah. Cut to the championship match between Russell and the Hammer. This is when John Morrison finally shows up in the movie. And he is by far my favorite actor in the movie. This is a movie with Fred Willard in it. And John Morrison is by far the most enjoyable person in this movie. He's just kind of going along with it, right? In a way that nobody else seems to be. Or kind of winking in the audience in a way that nobody else seems to be. There's a scene with a weigh-in, which is also something that never happens in pro wrestling.
That is a boxing thing, and there is a difference.
Where we see that Russell has weighed in at 25 pounds. That dog is definitely not 25 pounds. And John Morrison weighs in at 255. He is definitely not 255. So that is one pro wrestling thing where the weights are worked.
It makes a much better sell for the audience if he's literally 10 times the weight of his dog opponent.
Yes. But
like, you need like the idea needs to be reinforced that he is a man wrestling a dog.
But he would still be the 10 times the weight of his opponent if the dog weighed in at 18 pounds, which is probably what he is, and John Morrison weighed in at 180.
I definitely don't feel like that dog weighs 25 pounds.
Absolutely not. After the weigh-in, there's a scene where John Morrison talks to Mick Vaughn about how Mick Vaughn wants him to throw the match. Because Mick wants him to lose his title to a dog.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's fake. Because it's a work.
The first moment that it being a work is introduced. But John Morrison is kind of like, you know what? I don't want to do this. So they start the match. The match gets going. Russell hits his signature move on John Morrison, which he and Hunk have decided is called the Russell Tussle, which is not creative at all. But John Morrison has a literal ace up his sleeve in the form of a dog whistle. He pulls the dog whistle out of his elbow pad and starts blowing the dog whistle. The dog whistle immediately incapacitates Russell, despite that not being how a dog whistle fucking works at all.
Yeah, it makes Russell... There is a person off camera giving him the play dead command.
It's kryptonite. It is. This dog whistle, yes, is kryptonite. Dog whistles don't do that. When you blow a dog whistle, it attracts dogs. They come to you because they hear a whistle. They don't fall on the ground completely incapacitated. And yet, yeah, that is what happens to Russell here. John Morrison crawls over and pins a dog.
Amazing. Amazing.
And wins the match. And again, John Morrison is so game for this stuff. Like, during the weigh-in, he's doing all this, like, big showy stuff where he's doing, like, a heel promo. And he's, like, beating his hand and going, hammer, hammer, hammer. And he comes out to this, like, fake AC/DC music, which sounds like actual WWE Jim Johnston music. By the way,
yes,
he was actually a 3-time Intercontinental Champion.
They should have revised that then. That's way more impressive.
Yeah. His World Championship belt, by the way, is a neat-looking design, but it is a cheap-looking prop.
Oh, it is backyard as hell.
Yeah, there is another
nice backyard belt.
There's another belt that I guess is the Ferraro belt, which similarly looks just like it's made out of rubber.
It literally looks like cardboard. Like the belt that the Wrestlers Union has at least looks like a belt.
Like it's
shiny.
It looks
like they could have gone to. Yeah, it's shiny. It's metal. The other belt looks like cardboard.
Russell loses. The Ferraro family completely gutted by this. And then they overhear John Morrison talking to Mick Vaughn. Mick Vaughn's like, hey, I paid you to throw this match, and you didn't lose. And John Morrison's just like, hey, people are going to come back for the rematch, man. You gotta bring them back for the rematch. And Mick Vaughn acts like he has never heard of a rematch before. Because he starts pointing to his head and he goes, I knew you had something, kid. I knew you had a brain up there. And also in this scene, Mick Vaughn...
I can charge these suckers twice what they paid tonight.
Yeah. Mick Vaughn kind of saunters over to the Ferraro family and is like, oh, hey, by the way, guys, I own Russell now. Check Section 7, Paragraph 4 of the contract you signed. Not only do I own the dog now, I also own your arena now. Suckers, take that. And they despondently go away.
That's not going to hold up in court.
Well, the only person who has an attorney is Mick Vaughn. Ferraro did not believe or did not understand that if he was going to run a business, maybe he should have an attorney who can at least look a contract over for him. No one comes to that conclusion. Now, we talked about that adoption license. there is this pet store clerk who is watching TV. He's watching WUF wrestling, and he sees Russell on the TV, and he's like, oh, hey, I own that dog. And he holds up his adoption contract and is like, okay, maybe I should go talk to people about this. So he goes running off. Meanwhile, Max the Kid and Hunk the Monkey decide that they're going to have to save Russell from the WUF arena, where Russell is being kept once again by himself in an enclosure in an empty room with no food, no water, and nowhere to go to the bathroom.
Matt, I honestly don't even remember what happens at this point. I've been thinking about it. I do not remember what happens.
Okay.
They go to get him.
They go to get him. They very easily break into the arena. Like, right, it is a breeze.
The monkey pulls the same trick on the guard that he did on the British dog. Waving a banana around and creating basically a shadow puppet that people think is a man with a gun.
He didn't do a gun thing with the British Bulldog. He just had a big shadow. With a guard that catches them, he just pulls out a banana and pretends it's a gun, even though a banana isn't even remotely shaped like a gun.
Kind of shaped like a gun.
Have you ever seen a curved gun that looks like a banana?
Okay, fair.
This movie. So he fools the guard into thinking that he is a man with a gun instead of a monkey with a banana. And he tells the kid to handcuff the guard to the door, and they get Russell out of there. Then they just calmly walk away from the arena. They're not running. They are calmly walking, giving Mick Vaughn and his lawyer plenty of time to just walk up or drive up, get out of their car, and be like, hey, you can't take that dog. That's my dog. I have a contract that says I own him. Oh, by the way, in the scene where Russell is in the cage by himself with no food and water, he is literally like talking suicide talk at that point. He's talking about how he's worthless and he has no family and he doesn't want to live.
It's so really grim.
Enjoy that from your kids' movie about a wrestling dog, everybody.
Yeah, it's grim.
Anyway, Mick Vaughn confronts the kid and the monkey and the dog in the parking lot. And starts making overtures about how, like, I am going to take that dog away from you, child, and possibly beat you up. For reasons that are soon to be explained, the Ferraro family shows up at the WUF arena parking lot as well and says, like, hey, guess what, Mick Vaughn? We just met this guy from the pet store, and he says that he owns Russell. And the guy from the pet store pulls out his adoption contract, and he says, yep, I adopted Russell the day that he was supposed to go to the pound. And he, like, hands the contract over to Mick Vaughn and his lawyer. And the lawyer starts getting really worried. He's like, this invalidates our contract. We don't have any ownership of Russell anymore. This shows ownership. Here's the thing. They could just rip that thing up right then and there, and there would be no other record. Right?
Pretty much. Yeah.
Like, as far as we know, there's not a second copy of that adoption paper. They could just tear it to pieces and still own Russell, and it would be fine for them. But they act like this is a deal breaker and a game changer. They can't possibly do anything about this adoption contract. And the guy from the pet store is saying, I want the Ferraro family to have this dog. So they have a negotiation. Here's the negotiation. They're going to have a match. Russell is going to have a rematch against the Hammer, John Morrison. However, it is going to be a tag team match. So Russell is going to have to find a partner. Here's the stipulation of the match. If the Ferraros win, if Russell wins, they get Russell back, they get to keep Russell, and they get their arena back. If Mick Vaughn wins, Mick Vaughn gets everything, Russell and the arena. So that is the stipulation for the match. But Nate insists that they have the match at the Ferraro Arena. For some reason, Mick Vaughn agrees to all of this. And we have set the stage for the final showdown of the movie.
Now, on the surface, this is a terrible deal, right? Because, Matt, what would you rather fight? Would you rather fight a tiny dog, a very small dog, that is less than 2 feet tall,
mm-hmm.
that weighs allegedly 25 pounds, or that same tiny dog and a mystery opponent?
I think just the dog.
Yeah, I would want to fight the dog too. Especially if I'm Johnny Mundo and I am like super ripped and in shape. Like, I feel like there is no scenario where he can't just take the dog. Like, he can't just beat up a dog by himself. Why would they want it to be a tag team match?
I don't know, because Mick Vaughn is the one who comes up with that idea. He's the one with the most to lose from that idea, but he thinks it's going to be great. Back to Ferraro Arena. Nate is suiting up in his terrible wrestling gear again because he thinks he's going to be Russell's tag team partner. Because somehow, in however long he's been running this wrestling promotion, he hasn't found a wrestler good enough to tag with this dog, so he's just going to do it himself.
Couldn't get the Yeti.
Could not get the Yeti to do this. He has been
that
permanently...
That pirate guy looked pretty cool.
Hey, his mummy curse has been removed. He can't do it.
Sure.
We start the match. The Hammer and his tag team partner, who is that German yodeling guy, they come out and they do their entrance and everything. Russell comes out and does his entrance, and Max the Kid comes out as his tag team partner before his dad can do it. Once again, his dad is beaten to the punch of an entrance. Like,
yeah.
Nate is not hanging out in the gorilla position, overseeing everything in the show. He is somewhere not paying much attention to what is really happening.
Yeah. So, and again, this kid is wearing a circus outfit.
Yeah. And the match is John Morrison and a huge guy in lederhosen versus a dog and a child.
This guy is not a wrestler. He is a professional stuntman.
Yeah. Versus a dog and a child.
A dog and a child. And I'm watching this, and I told you, Matt, I was like, okay, by the logic of tag team matches, the way this should go is that these two grown men who are bodybuilders and professional wrestlers work this child over, beat the shit out of a child until he makes a hot tag to a dog. And that's almost what happens.
Kinda. What really happens is the kid, who has been trained by a monkey to wrestle, holds his own against this giant German bodybuilder guy for a while. And they both manage to tag out at the same time. So it's a fresh tag to Russell and a fresh tag to John Morrison at the same time.
Now, there are multiple instances in this match where it should have been a disqualification.
Well, the first one is that the family runs out, the Ferraros run out, and they see that Max is wrestling in this match, and they're like, no, 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 this is not going to happen. And Colleen, the mom, goes into the ring and starts hitting the German guy with her purse.
DQ.
That's
in front of the
disqualification.
The bell has rung.
Yeah.
That's a DQ. Max also just straight kicks that dude in the balls again. DQ, instant. It happens in front of the ref. The ref sees it. He also gouges his eyes, and he also pulls on his nose hairs, which is super gross. So, like, the kid is working heel, which is bananas.
Although, wouldn't it have been great to have had a father-son moment where, like, where Nate tells the kid, like, you're gonna go out there and you're gonna work heel, brother.
If Max had come out, like, full Ric Flair, If Max had come out and been like, it's Rolex time, woo! Like, this movie would have been 10 times better.
After I win this match, I'm gonna go to your hotel room, and I'm gonna steal your woman, and there's nothing you can do about it. Woo!
Yeah, if a 10-year-old child would have yelled that in John Morrison's face, this movie, I would have maybe forgiven a lot of this movie if that happened.
Yeah. Instead, what happens is Russell and John Morrison have a fight for a while where Russell once again does his signature move. Then Johnny Mundo once again pulls out his dog whistle. And this time, he's not even trying to hide that he's blowing this dog whistle. He's doing it right in front of the ref. He's getting up and he's running around the ring, looking at the audience blowing the dog whistle. Like, again, instant disqualification.
Yeah, it is a foreign object. It is a blatant use of a foreign object. That is... It's the most illegal thing in pro wrestling.
It's an international object, brother. But the ref, who is the worst ref, lets that slide. Russell falls down in the middle of the ring. And Johnny Mundo gets up on... John Morrison gets up on the third rope, because there are four fucking ropes, and prepares to do the end of the world. His signature finishing move.
Which I actually like that he does his actual finishing move.
Yeah. But we find out that Russell is not actually down. He is playing dead, like a dog often does. He sits there and counts with Max to a count of five. Johnny Mundo does his move. Russell rolls out of the way. Johnny Mundo falls onto the mat. Then Russell does the Russell tussle. Knocks out John Morrison. Pins him. Gets the win. And there's one scene where the family assembles back into the ring. The dad, Nate, tells Max that this thing that he has said continually throughout the movie, where it's like, you always need to have a guy named Max in your corner, which I don't get at all. I mean, I guess their granddad was named Max. His name is Maximilian.
Yeah, it's a weird thing that is, like, it is structured like a callback, but it is not.
Yeah.
It is not a callback. It doesn't matter.
And then, you know, they announce that Russell is the champion. They give him a belt. And
they announced that they're the tag team champions. This was not announced as a tag team championship match.
And as far as we know, the Hammer and the other guy weren't the tag team champions. The Hammer was the...
You gotta promote that, brother.
The Hammer was the world champion. Was he also half of the tag team champions?
And then we find out that Maximilian grows up to be the new Illmaniac, and he and Russell, in the last line of the movie, it says that we became the most famous tag team of all time. They are wrestling in an arena that maybe seats 2,000 people in Portland.
Most famous tag team of all time.
Yeah, that's the movie.
Do we have any high points?
I will say that I did like the music. I liked
The music was okay. The actual WrestleMania
theme. The 80s montage theme.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's funny. Like, I'm glad that it exists in the movie.
It's one of a very limited number of funny things in the movie. I enjoyed John Morrison in this. As I said, he is the most enjoyable actor in the movie. He seems to be having fun, and he's hamming it up. And it's kind of fun, the scenes that he's in. Particularly that weigh-in scene where he's talking smack to Russell.
And, like I said, like I predicted before we watched it, he does some really good physical stuff in the little bit that he's allowed to do. Like, there's a scene where they kind of, you know, I think they CGI the dog coming at him, and he does the big, you know, he turned him inside out Lariat sell, which is fun.
Yeah, I mean, he does sell. the moves that the dog does, which I have to give him credit for. And also, then I want to point out my favorite line in the movie.
Okay.
And that is something that the British Bulldog character says.
Okay.
He sees Russell hanging out in a box in an alley, and he goes, "Oi, oi you. What are you doing hanging out here in the mean back alleys of Portland?"
He says, "What's a nice dog like you doing in the mean back alleys of Portland?"
I lost it. Lost it.
I am not even kidding. It's the hardest I have ever heard you laugh, and we have been friends for 7 years.
I lost my shit.
Yeah. This isn't really a high point, but it is kind of fun to see, you know, John Hennigan. He's wearing his John Morrison clothes. Like, he's doing his John Morrison entrance taunts. He's doing his John Morrison finishing move. Like, he is, for all intents and purposes, that guy.
There's a cardboard cutout of him that you observed is definitely from the WWE shop.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's like in the background of Bad Chad. We didn't talk about Bad Chad, who's this movie's version of Mean Gene.
Yeah.
There's a shot of this cardboard cutout that is 100% bought on clearance from Shop Zone.
Low points of Russell Madness.
They don't know how fucking wrestling works.
They don't know a thing about wrestling. They know about Vince McMahon. They know about Mean Gene Okerlund. They may know enough to do a weird stealth joke about a British bulldog, but they don't know how a wrestling match is. They don't know how a wrestling match works.
Yeah, like when you sit down and write about something, you kind of have to do a bare minimum, right?
Professional wrestling match.
It's on fucking twice a week, guys. It's on TV. It's on basic cable twice a week. Not even counting Lucha Underground.
There are a million wrestling matches on YouTube that you can go watch.
Yeah. Look, all they had to do was spend $10. Actually, the first month's free.
Yeah.
Sign up for the fucking network, watch a match or two.
And get the entire month of June for free.
And it's like, it's so weird because it is very, very clearly them writing what they think wrestling is.
Yeah.
It's people who don't know anything about wrestling writing what they think wrestling is. So it's like, oh yeah, people think it's real. It's just like, it's a boxing ring. Because we see that ring, and that ring looks stiff as shit, by the way. That ring looks like a kickboxing ring.
Yeah. And the turnbuckles are really weird. They're not like they're not padded like wrestling turnbuckles are at all.
And they put a little platform on the top turnbuckle so that Russell can sit on the little platform and then do a move off the turnbuckle.
But then later in another shot, that platform's gone.
Yeah, so it's not like they try to hide it at all either.
Yeah. Other low points of the movie. Besides them not knowing about the sport that the movie is supposed to be about.
The 6-year-old daughter has nothing to do with the plot. She is just there because I guess they thought that the family should have 2 kids for maximum marketability.
As I said, there's one scene where she's there to have tea with the monkey. And there's another scene that we forgot about that she's in that makes her even more vestigial and like, oh boy. Okay. So after Russell's first match, and he becomes a sensation on YouTube, reporters assemble outside of the Ferraro Arena to find out when Russell's next match is going to be. And Nate has to kind of like weasel his way through it like, of course he's going to have another match. Yeah, I always said he was going to have another match. And then the little girl is like, I thought you were taking him back to the pound tomorrow. In front of 100 reporters and TV cameras just to create an uncomfortable moment for the dad and make the dad look like a scumbag liar. So that's great.
No characters in this movie have an arc. Except, I guess, Russell?
Yeah, Russell the dog
does. Wishes for a family and gets a family.
Yeah, that's it. Another big low point for me is the special effects on the mouth movements for all the dogs and Hunk.
Oh, they're so off-putting.
Absolutely terrible. They look so bad. Not to mention, like, the special effects of the dog peeing on 1,000 people.
Yeah, there's so much of a dog peeing in people's mouths in this movie, and I was not prepared for that. And I was not prepared for that.
Is that something that happens in every other Air Bud movie? We did discover that this apparently comes from the studio that makes all the Air Bud movies. I guess they broke away from
Studios.
Yeah, they broke away from Disney some years ago, I suppose. So this movie was made by that studio. Do all the Air Bud movies have peeing in them? Just constant peeing?
That's a thing that I kind of want to get to in final thoughts, where it's like, this is a movie. Again, it has no respect for its audience. Like, it's a movie that is clearly talking down to children.
Any other major low points other than just, like, a plot that doesn't go anywhere and doesn't pay off what it's supposed to pay off? Like, you would think that it would be the will that would prevent Mick Vaughn from taking Russell, right? Or from them selling their arena. Because that will says they can't sell the arena until the venue is profitable. If the venue wasn't profitable yet, then they couldn't sell it to Mick Vaughn. That is an actual legal argument. But that doesn't come up.
They have a year. They have a year before they can sell it, and it clearly hasn't been a year in this movie.
Yeah. But that doesn't come back up. Yeah,
this movie is garbage.
Let's do final thoughts for Russell Madness.
Do you remember when we watched Ready to Rumble?
I do, yes.
When we were done with that movie, which is terrible, although arguably better than this.
I would say definitely better than this, even though absolutely terrible.
The question we kept asking at the end of that movie was, who is this for?
Yeah.
And I have the same question with this movie. Because in theory, these movies, I feel like, are for kids. They're for tiny little stupid babies.
Yeah.
Who already like the thing that they're putting the animal into, right? Like, if you already like football, if you're a kid who likes football, then go watch Air Bud Golden Receiver, right?
Right. If you like basketball, watch the original Air Bud. If you like baseball, Seventh Inning Fetch. And on.
Yeah. Yeah. So this one's for kids who like wrestling. But you and I can, you know, we can tell you guys, kids who like wrestling, and they know things about wrestling. They know the rules. They know how the matches work.
They know that the ring has three fucking ropes.
So, it all just comes back to, and it is not difficult to make something look like pro wrestling, right? Because they got wrestlers. All they had to do was ask John Morrison. All they had to do was ask him, hey, does that ring look right? And nobody did.
Nobody did.
Nobody did.
Nope.
And that dude takes improv classes, so you know he was showing up and being like, I guess I got a yes and this.
What blows my mind about this movie is how it's supposed to present this world where wrestling is super important. And it's supposed to present this world where family is super important. But you never really feel either one. Everything feels really low stakes. And the family stuff seems really forced. I can't imagine anybody, even a tiny baby, feeling any emotion in that last scene where you find out that Max has become the new Illmaniac. It's just nothing.
Like the original Illmaniac to come back.
Yeah,
and he doesn't.
The original Illmaniac, as far as we know, isn't dead. He should still be around. He was popular in the 80s. Which was
what if Illmaniac was just what Randy the Ram wrestled as on the West Coast?
My joke when they first showed the Ferraro Arena was that this is where Randy the Ram wrestled his last match. Because it definitely does look like that arena.
The inaccuracy bothers me, but what really bothers me is that they didn't care enough to get it right. And they got it wrong in every conceivable way, in ways that are obviously people who don't watch wrestling doing what they think wrestling is, and looking at it as a thing they don't need to get right.
Well, and the other thing is, one of the big plot points of this movie is that, you know, John Morrison's going to throw a match, is being paid off to throw a match, and that makes Mick Vaughn the villain of the movie, right? That he's going to fix a match. Wrestling's a work. Kids know that wrestling is a work.
Yeah, yeah. And there's an amazing bit where Nate says, "Where I come from, wrestlers fight with honor." It's like, brother, where do you come from? Do you come from Mexico in the 60s?
Yeah, no kidding. Or do you come from, like the 20s when some wrestling was shoot wrestling?
If only the Great Power Udi had shown up.
Well, I think that's quite a note to end on. Boy, did we hate Russell Madness.
Like, a Miami connection is made by someone who cares. Like, say what you will about Miami Connection, you cannot take that away from it. Those people cared about that movie. And it's the better for it. This movie is just garbage.
It is cynical garbage made by people who do not care. All right, that is it for our Russell Madness episode. I think we're going to try to start another series of movies next time. I don't know that we're sure what those are, but you can come back in two weeks and find out what those are. We've been talking forever about doing pulp movies. You know, your Phantoms, your Shadows, that kind of stuff. So maybe we'll dig into that. We will see. But until then, we'll see you in 2 weeks, everybody. I want to leave by telling you that you can send us emails at our email address, which is moviefighterscast@gmail.com. Our music was composed by Michael Kill, and our website was designed by Sean Bogus. See you in 2 weeks, everybody.
This has been a Kaleidos Media production.